Hi, it's Mountain Edition, all the news from the week here in the Roaring Fork Valley coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Zoe Rohn. I'm excited to be here with Elizabeth Stewart Severy.
Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Elizabeth. It's been quite a week here. It's really starting to feel like fall. The aspens are turning gold, and it's definitely getting cooler.
Yeah, and that means some fishing restrictions on area rivers have been lifted, but we're still in a drought, and anglers are being asked to avoid other streams altogether.
Plus, fall means the Roaring Fork Transportation Authority, or RAFTA, is running fewer buses. The BRT and the Carbondale Circulator will now only run Monday through Friday.
That comes right as the Castle Creek Bridge and Hallam Street Improvement Project resumed this week. This means detours are back in place. Traffic is entering Aspen on 6th Street and leaving via Power Plant Road.
So city officials are urging commuters to find ways to get into town that don't involve driving their own cars. And two ballot questions to raise funding for transportation projects in Colorado head to voters this November.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition. Tomorrow, Upper Colorado River interagency fire officials will lift all fire restrictions in an area that includes the Roaring Fork Valley. Fire managers say conditions like moisture and vegetation, current fire activity, and weather forecasts have improved enough to lift restrictions, but warn that people should still be cautious.
Also following recent rains, the White River National Forest is reopening areas that were closed due to the Lake Christine fire. The lower loop of the 1913 trail is now open. That's about 85% of the Lone Pine Trail system, which is popular with dirt and mountain bikes. Areas northeast of the fire perimeter are also open for hunting access. Much of Basalt Mountain remains closed because of ongoing firefighting activity. Officials warn that there is high potential for falling trees, and hikers and hunters should steer clear of all closed areas.
Eagle County's Board of Commissioners is contributing $400,000 to help pay for mental health counselors in its schools. Wyatt Orme has
more. Eagle County's schools need mental health services, according to County Commissioner Jeannie McQueenie.
We have, you know, assessments about the number of kids who are feeling depressed or suicidal. We know that it's an alarming number.
Last spring, Basalt High School identified 84 students out of a student body of nearly 500 who needed therapy but weren't getting it. The Roaring Fork Valley is slated to get one counselor, the Eagle River Valley, three. The schools themselves will also contribute financially. The money the county is contributing is from its general fund, not the new retail marijuana taxes, which are earmarked for mental health initiatives. Commissioner McQueenie says that money is trickling in. Wyatt Orme, Aspen Public Radio News.
The city of Aspen wants to cut traffic without adding more lanes or changing the S-curves in an experiment called SHIFT, which is slated for next summer. The city will test out a variety of programs aimed at giving people options to get out of the car as they commute into town. Elizabeth, you've been following this big, multifaceted program. What's the goal here?
As you said, this is about reducing traffic and parking issues in Aspen, and Ashley Pearl, who is the program director, has explained it this way. If you're now sitting alone in traffic and you don't want to do that, the city will try to come up with other options for you. So the biggest thing to remember is that this is an experiment. The city really hopes to collect data about what works and what doesn't to change people's behavior and get them out of cars. So they'll track that through this app called Miles. It sounds like you log in and the app tracks how you're commuting and gives you points if you're doing things like biking or taking the bus or carpooling, and then you can redeem those points at participating businesses in town. The app is the only piece of this experiment that has been approved by City Council. Last week, they agreed to spend $63,000 to try it out for 4 months.
And what are other components of this project or experiment? How exactly is the city trying to get people out of their cars?
There are essentially three pieces to this project. The first is to improve bus service from the Intercept lot and add amenities there like a coffee shop to try to make the stop more palatable to commuters to get them out of the car
right,
and onto a bus. Second, they're going to use Buttermilk as a bike hub, which would be mostly for people coming from Snowmass. And then third, as Program Director Ashley Pearl puts it, they want to infuse downtown with more on-demand transit, which means essentially giving people lots of different options to get around downtown or to the core without driving. It includes things like having e-bikes or electric scooters and also an extended downtowner type service, which is being called the Ride. And that would serve areas like Red Mountain and Cemetery Lane that are a bit outside of the core. When City Council held a work session to talk about SHIFT last month, this piece drew a lot of the focus, and council members also raised concerns about public outreach.
Who has council been hearing from, and what are their concerns?
Well, Councilmember Adam Frisch talked a lot about taxi companies and bike shops. And Todd Gardner of High Mountain Taxi was actually at that work session. He said he wasn't fully consulted as the city worked through the process of getting bids for the extended downtowner type service, that Ride service that I mentioned. He says this would cut deeply into their bread and butter business. And Frisch talked about how it's really important to be sure that the city is not competing with private businesses like High Mountain Taxi or local bike shops. The concern over the outreach might be in part because it has been a bit non-traditional. There were a series of pop-up events, a lot of surveys, but they didn't really have like the typical kind of open houses that you typically see with something like this. Pearl says the goal with that was to meet people closer to their homes where they are, rather than expecting busy people who might be juggling work and commuting and family life to come into town and give up their evenings. In any event, city staff heard a loud message last month about the importance of engaging the business community, and the work session ended without really a clear idea of whether council is fully behind this project.
Okay, so at this point, council has approved the Miles app to gather data. Is the rest of the project moving forward?
That is not totally clear yet. Pearl says the Ride, which is that third component, the on-demand service, is causing, as she put it, the most heartburn. She says the entire council really needs to stand behind the city-funded project. So the team of staff members working on this are looking closely at each element to see if there are ways to tweak or change things to get every single council member on board. Pearl and others are cautious about cutting too much out of the lab. Here's how Pearl put it.
And at some point, if we keep whittling it away, we'll end up with something that won't be impactful. But we haven't yet really decided at what point that would be.
So she and others will meet with council members over the next couple weeks to try to find that sweet spot in this project to ease some of that heartburn without decimating the experiment. Plus, Assistant City Manager Barry Crook says he needs to start setting up meetings with some of the vendors who will be providing these services and get some of those other pieces in place so the project would be ready in time for next summer's busy season. It will be back in front of council in early October.
Listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Zoe Rome.
And I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy. And Zoe, listeners tuned in to Mountain Edition obviously want to stay in the know about local news.
Absolutely. And they can stay on top of what's happening with Aspen Public Radio and throughout the community by liking our Facebook page and following us on Twitter at Aspen Pub Radio.
On our Facebook page, you can interact with our station through comments on our posts and by messaging us directly. You can also follow along with breaking news. Like this week, the missing bell lift chair.
One of those classic chairs went missing last week after it had been removed for routine maintenance. Officials say the lift can't run without all the chairs on the line, and they want the chair back, no questions asked.
Aspen Public Radio invites you to dive into our news reports through our Instagram account. Follow Aspen Public Radio on Instagram to see our reporters out in the field, to see photos of our station guests, and a celebration of life in the valley. We want to see your photos, too. Tag us or use the hashtag APRNews to be a part of the conversation. Two ballot questions seeking to fund road improvement projects are heading to Colorado voters this November. As KUNC's Matt Bloom reports, the first one's title is actually less of a question and more of a demand.
If passed, the Fix Our Dam Roads Initiative would force the Colorado Department of Transportation to bond $3.5 billion in state funds next year. John Caldera with the Independence Institute is heading the effort. He says it would pay for a list of high-priority projects, like expanding North I-25.
We're getting closer to 6 million people in Colorado, and it's the same two lanes in each direction going up to Fort Collins. And we wonder why we're in a traffic jam. It's because we haven't made this core function of government a priority at the state legislature.
The Secretary of State's office verified that the effort had enough valid petition signatures this week. They are still reviewing a different ballot question that, if it qualifies, seeks to raise the state's sales tax by 21% to fund transportation projects. For KUNC, I'm Matt Bloom.
Eagle County's commissioners will put a question to voters this fall asking to extend the open space and trails tax until 2040. Wyatt Orm reports.
Polls show that 80% of Eagle County voters approve of extending the property tax. It's been in place since 2002. Respondents to community surveys indicate that preserving wildlife habitat and the county's scenic beauty are chief among their reasons for wanting to extend the tax. Eagle's Open Space and Trails program is responsible for things like boat ramps along the Colorado River and conservation easements on properties in Emma. A similar measure failed in 2016. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
A ballot question that would increase Colorado's minimum oil and gas well setbacks has qualified for the November ballot. Initiative 97 would create a half-mile buffer zone between new wells and occupied buildings like homes and schools. Supporters argue the growing Front Range population needs protection from the dangers of industrial drilling. Leaders in the state's oil and gas industry say the new setback distance would disqualify a vast majority of non-public land for development, crippling Colorado's economy. More than $2 million have already been poured into a Vote No on Initiative 97 campaign.
The Colorado Secretary of State's office has also verified signatures for Initiatives 108 and 126. Initiative 108 would amend the state's constitution to require compensation for a drop in private property values caused by new state laws or regulations. It's sponsored by the Colorado Farm Bureau. Initiative 126 targets the payday lending industry. It restricts charges on payday loans to a yearly rate of 36% and eliminates all other finance charges and fees associated with payday lending.
40 million people rely on the Colorado River for their water. Many of those who watch the river closely say it's tapped out, citing a possible shortage in less than 2 years.
But not everyone agrees with that assessment, and a few loud voices say there are still places in the watershed to dam and divert. As Luke Runyon reports, that difference of opinion has big implications for water development in the West.
3 years ago, Barb Horn stood along the banks of the Animas River in the city of Durango, Colorado. She was watching the usually clear water change color.
It was absolutely surreal, and I think that's why it went viral. It's like somebody photoshopped the river orange.
Upstream, Environmental Protection Agency workers and a contractor triggered the spill of 3 million gallons of rust-colored mine waste while cleaning up the Gold King mine.
If you're a Harry Potter fan, it looked like butterbeer.
Horn is a water quality specialist with the state's Department of Parks and Wildlife. For her, it was a stark, visual reminder of the river's long history of pollution from abandoned mines.
And it immediately tugged on your heartstrings, thinking nothing could live in that.
The mine spill closed down recreation in the river and forced farmers to temporarily shut off irrigation to their crops. But life in the river, it didn't change much. The fish and bugs survived, one crisis averted, until this year.
So I joke that now the river looks like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory's Chocolate Fudge River.
That's because of a big wildfire that burned about 55,000 acres in the mountains nearby. Now, every time it rains over the burn area, a thick sludge washes into the Animas. Horn says official surveys haven't been done, but it likely killed all the river's fish through town.
You could literally see the fish coming to the banks, gasping for air. It physically smothered their gills and their ability to breathe.
It certainly is unlucky. I mean, It's unlucky now, and it's been unlucky for throughout time, really.
Scott Roberts is with the Mountain Studies Institute, a nonprofit research group based in nearby Silverton. He says the river is facing plenty of problems that don't draw public attention.
It's being stressed by drought. It's being stressed by warmer temperatures. It's being stressed by runoff from wildfire. It's being stressed by elevated metal concentrations. It's being stressed by bacteria, by nutrients.
Certainly the Animas is a bit of a poster child for some of the issues that plague rivers around the western United States.
Ty Churchwell is with Trout Unlimited and lives and works in Durango. We're standing on a pedestrian bridge over the Animas.
But I don't think that the problems that are plaguing the Animas today are unique to the Animas.
In fact, Churchwell says all these issues are increasingly common throughout the West. Drought, ash-laden runoff, and mine pollution are often the norm in watersheds. The Animas has just experienced all of them to the extreme.
Yeah, so the shop, we're a fly shop.
And this doesn't make things easy for the local business owners, heavily dependent on tourists rafting and fishing on the Animas. Tom Knopik is co-owner of Duranglers in downtown Durango.
Yeah, it's considered a top fly fishing destination, which mostly is for trout.
He takes solace in knowing that all this trauma is bringing attention to the Animas' myriad problems. Some of the mine waste is now being treated before draining into the river. And at least when it comes to the fire-related sludge, the healing process has already begun.
You know, we don't like it. We'd rather not be dealing with it. But the reality is the Animas will be, in a short period of time, better than it was before the fire.
But it could be another 5 to 10 years before the Animas is back to its former self, according to water quality specialist Barb Horn.
Rivers really are a great metaphor for our body and our own health and our own lives. You can think about maybe the Animas is having a heart attack, a stroke, and clogging up and saying we need to pay attention to what we eat or what we're doing with her and to her.
And she says rivers have been rebounding from drought and floods and fire for millennia. It's just human activity that's made the frequency, duration, and magnitude of those events worse. I'm Luke Runyon.
This story is part of ongoing coverage of the Colorado River, produced in partnership with public media station KUNC in Northern Colorado, with financial support by the Walton Family Foundation.
The city of Aspen wants to know what the public thinks about sandwich board signs. A survey online asks how the folded, temporary sidewalk signage should be regulated. Sandwich boards are scheduled to be phased out by September 28th in Aspen, but after 4 months of conversations with business owners, the city may walk back those restrictions.
During the development moratorium, the city noticed a proliferation of sandwich boards in downtown, which they say cluttered sidewalks and creates aesthetic inconsistency. Due to a 2015 Supreme Court ruling that cities cannot regulate signs based on content, Aspen selected to ban all sandwich boards.
However, talks with business owners have led the city to reconsider an outright ban. Many business owners, particularly those local owners who can only afford to operate in second-tier retail spaces, said the signs are important for helping customers locate hard-to-find shops and restaurants.
The survey presents options such as introducing a permit system or a one sign per building option. Public feedback is being collected through September 14th and will be presented to City Council during the first reading of the updated sign ordinance on September 17th.
Colorado Mountain College, or CMC, broke ground on two new buildings at its Spring Valley campus just outside of Glenwood Springs this week. Wyatt Orm has more.
A new fitness center will be built on the east side of the Spring Valley campus near the soccer fields. The other building is a new student center where the admissions offices will be, as well as a bookstore, a coffee shop, and some classrooms. CMC has budgeted around $19 million for construction. It's projected to take about a year to build the two buildings. CMC's President and CEO Dr. Carrie Hauser and Dr. Heather Exby, the Glenwood Springs campus dean, will speak at a ceremony at noon. Campus tours are available this morning. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Zoe Rome.
And I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy. In other local news, the public can weigh in on Best in Show in Carbondale's 2018 Art Around Town.
Plus, fall means election season, and if you're wondering what's going to be on the ballot, check out our coverage of local and state ballot initiatives. Those stories and more news are on our website now. Take a listen at aspenpublicradio.org.
The Carbondale Clay Center's new show, Scratch and Attach, A Year of Making, opens Friday. As Kristen Kay reports, this special exhibition celebrates the work of the ceramic studio's students.
Matt Eames is the studio manager of the Carbondale Clay Center. He says while the studio typically displays the work of professional ceramicists, Scratch and Attach is meant to give back to the locals who are learning the medium in their spare time.
For this show, we're really trying to highlight those people that make the Clay Center go.
Eam says that seeing work from such a wide range of ages and experience levels is rare and shows the creativity and progression of amateur artists. Kristen Kay, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
Aspen Public Radio President Carolyn Heldman will be stepping down from her leadership role at the end of the year. Allison Bektesh has the story.
Heldman joined the station as program director in 2008 and moved into her leadership role in 2013. In her decade with the organization, she led the charge for increased local programming, creating a slew of public affairs shows and launching community outreach events. Listeners have noticed membership has risen 45%, and Heldman says she's leaving the station at an all-time high.
I feel so comfortable leaving now because I'm leaving this place in such good hands and we've never sounded better. I hear that all the time and I'm so proud of it.
She will stay on through the end of 2018 and will continue to be involved in special projects with the station. Allison Bektesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
Snowmass Village Council members started drafting regulations for retail marijuana this week. After June's 3-2 vote, where council decided to allow marijuana, there have been remaining questions about how to regulate and tax the product. Resolution 22, which will be on the ballot this fall, asks voters if they want to levy an additional 5% tax on cannabis products sold in Snowmass Village.
In a lengthy session on Tuesday, Town Council discussed how to regulate this issue. Initial discussions included distancing marijuana retail spaces from school bus stops and educational spaces like the Treehouse or Anderson Ranch. Mayor Markey Butler also mentioned regulating pot shops to inconspicuous places. Council will need to finalize and pass these regulations before the moratorium on retail marijuana expires on October 31st. Aspen Skiing Company announced yesterday that it is once again stepping into the political arena with its latest advertising campaign, and this season's marketing focuses on climate change.
In what it has dubbed Give a Flake, SkiCo is asking visitors to become activists. The company released a video asking those who love powder days and après ski to, quote, protect your passion and create big change. The ad campaign will target three senators through postage-paid cards. SkiCo says Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Susan Collins of Maine, and Ohio's Rob Portman are key swing votes for climate policy. Christian Knapp is SkiCo's chief marketing officer. He says taking a stand on climate change is the right thing to do and essential for SkiCo's long-term survival.
We want to support the sport we love, and we want to use our position in the world to help tell the story of it. And, lobbying politicians and supporting clean energy, carbon tax, all of those things are going to be integral to fixing this problem for the next generation.
The ad campaign will also focus on promoting social tolerance.
Glenwood Springs is moving forward on a new public art piece to be displayed by the new pedestrian bridge known as the North Landing. At tonight's meeting, one city council member will be appointed to help with the selection. In its call for artists, the city outlines several requirements for the project, including that the artist have experience with a public art project of this size and that the project reflect Glenwood Springs' Western character.
17 applicants responded to the city's call to artists. The Arts and Culture Board will select 5 finalists. The winner will then be chosen in October by a panel made up of representatives from the city, the Historical Society, and the Downtown Development Authority. Following this, a series of design charrettes open to the community will take place before the project is finalized and constructed. The project is partly funded by a $20,000 grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. The city is aiming to have the final piece installed next September.
Colorado is called the Mother of Rivers for a reason. It's one of the most popular states for river rafting in the country. But unprecedented growth, a changing climate, drought, and wildfires are taking their toll on this multi-million dollar industry. For Aspen Public Radio, Ali Budner reports.
Jordan Poitras has been a river rafting guide for almost a decade.
Buckle up, all four of those buckles for me.
Yep, up there.
Today, he's helping a few customers shake their nerves before a midday trip down the Arkansas River, just outside of Canyon City, Colorado.
You ever been rafting before?
No.
First time?
First time.
Cool, it's my first time too. Don't worry though, I watched all those YouTube videos
last night.
Yeah, man, it's amazing we can find on the internet nowadays.
He's also preparing himself for what might be a challenging run. That's because the water in the river is relatively low right now.
As water comes down, we have more obstacles to avoid, more rocks, more moves to be made. It is much harder for us.
He loves his job, but he says lower water is rougher on the guides' bodies and on their paychecks.
We don't get paid by the hour, we get paid by the trip. So when the water goes down, our hourly goes way down. down. We're working harder for the people out here.
Right now, he says, the river is running at about a third of the volume that it was at this time last year.
Yeah, it's August. We always experience low flows in August, particularly late August.
Tony Keenan is Poitras' boss and an owner of Whitewater Adventure Outfitters. He's been in the rafting business since the 80s, and he says there's always ups and downs. This year hasn't been the best.
2016 was solid. 2017 was solid. Poof, this year snowpack numbers were significantly less. I mean, anybody that went skiing this year saw for themselves that snowpack was pretty thin, particularly in certain parts of the state.
But it hasn't been the worst year either, at least for the Arkansas River.
It's been manageable, and that's the best we could get in a year like this.
Keenan says it's manageable mainly because of one thing.
We get releases from the upstream reservoirs.
It's part of an agreement between rafting outfitters, fish and wildlife conservationists, state parks, and water agencies. The deal aims to keep optimal flow in the river for various uses, including recreation. The agreement is voluntary, so Keenan and his competitors are not guaranteed anything, but he says everyone knows the rafting business brings in tourism dollars for the whole region.
You know, Colorado Springs Utilities is a great example.
Keenan says a lot of tourists come to Colorado Springs for outdoor recreation, and that includes rafting. The utility company knows that.
They're aware of that, so it's good for them as well as us.
Outfitters on some of Colorado's other rivers have not been so lucky.
Well, at this moment, we're no longer offering raft trips down the Animas River. It's become too low.
Alex Michael is the president of Mild to Wild Rafting and Jeep Trail Tours in Durango, Colorado. Unlike the Arkansas, the Animas is a free-flowing river. There are no reservoirs upstream to release extra water from, so Michael doesn't have that kind of insurance policy.
You know, for most of the summer, we had enough water. Because even at low water, the river can be a ton of fun. There's lots of maneuvering. There's fun drops. You know, it's a great time out on the river.
But the massive wildfire near Durango this summer squelched the area's tourism.
We were hopeful we'd be able to rebound a bit more than we did. But, well, that was really curtailed from the lack of flow that we ran into last week.
He says if it rains more in the alpine areas near the Animas headwaters, they may be able to start taking raft groups out again through October. But they will already have missed peak season.
It's going to be a little more beans and rice this winter than normal.
It's an uncertain time as continued population growth and a changing climate put stress on Colorado's streams and rivers. Rafting outfitters will have to keep going with the flow, even if that could mean no flow at all. I'm Allie Budner.
This piece comes to us from the Mountain West News Bureau, a collaboration of public media stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and Idaho.
That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy.
And I'm Zoe Rome. AspenPublicRadio.org is your one-stop shop for local, national, and world headlines. All of our on-air news stories are archived online, so you never miss a newscast. You can stream or podcast shows like this one and NPR special reports, browse photo slideshows, and find supplemental links to further coverage. Go deeper, go to AspenPublicRadio.org.
Join us tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup, when host Allison Bechtesh sits down with reporters from around the valley. This week's guests are David Krause, editor of the Aspen Times, Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Cindy Hirschfeld, editor of Aspen Sojourner magazine. They'll look into the city of Aspen's decision to build new offices and what life in the valley is like for many undocumented workers.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.